checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago. On this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat for the day finished the March at 735, up 3 cents. The May at 743 3/4, up 4 1/4. July wheat at 745 1/4, up 4 cents on the afternoon. The hard red in Kansas City, 10.5 cents lower for the day. It finished at $7.99. Corn futures, the March contract, 696 1/4, unchanged. The May at 693 1/4, down 2 1/4. And July corn at 684, down 3 on the afternoon. The September futures at $5.81 3/4, up 0.5. December at 564 3/4, a penny and 3/4 higher. That's for the new crop. And the March contract at 574 for next year, up 0.25 cents for the day. Beans finished the March contract at 14.22 1/2, up 1 1/3 cents. May futures 14.14, up 4 1/2 cents. July soybeans $14.05, up 4 1/4 cents a bushel. And the September futures at 13.10 3/4, up 2. November at $12.76 1/2 for the new crop, 0.5 cent higher. The January down 3 1/2 at $12.77. Bean meal at $4.09.20, down 1.10. Bean oil up 62 at $51.72. Live cattle futures finished the April at $129.40, 55 cents lower. April feeders at $144.95, down $2.20. And April lean hogs at $85.80, down 20 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of February, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us from Stuart Peterson, right here in Champaign, is Jackie Vakes. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Good afternoon,
Todd. Well, let's talk about the marketplace just a bit. There were lots of things in the outside markets that we probably ought to discuss. Sequestration might be the first thing to come up. What did you see?
Well, I think it's extremely important that people, you know, just to make it clear what sequestration is this is what was a part of the 2011 budget, where they said, you know, that if they do not have a budget passed by the end of this month, then these automatic cuts are going to go into place. And I think a lot of people, especially, you know, people in our business, maybe don't think that that's as serious, but one of the things that, there's a number of things it affects, okay? We could see 1 million military people laid off, which increases unemployment, certainly not a great thing for us. But more seriously, they're talking about maybe furloughing all of the agricultural inspectors for up to 15 days. Well, if that happens, here's just a short synopsis of what we're talking about. We're talking about 2,100 fewer food facility inspections going on by the FDA. We're talking about effectively shutting down, perhaps, the meat industry, because by law, unless they have a federal inspector in place, they cannot produce meat, which could lead to higher meat prices and shorter stocks on the shelves, basically affecting about 6,300 establishments nationwide, $10 billion in production losses, and lost wages of over $400 million. So, you know, we're talking about more than 500,000 people from an employment standpoint that could be affected by this, just within the agricultural industry itself. And then if you take it one step further, you're looking at the potential for that March 28th agricultural acreage report not being able to be released on time. And so, you know, there's some very, very far-reaching things going on here. The American Meat Institute is trying to work with the USDA to look for contingencies. In other words, you know, lay off other employees rather than inspectors. I doubt if other employees will be too excited about that, but, you know, they're going to have to try and do everything they can. Now, I did talk to someone who this morning was talking to a lobbyist in Washington, D.C., and their opinion was is that we probably will see it happen, you know, that the chances are there. So when you look at the inspectors, let's stop and, you know, some guys might be saying, okay, that affects the meat industry. Well, it also affects the grain industry, remember. All of those barges, all of those boats that leave the United States in any way, shape, or form are inspected by USDA employees. And so this could grind us to a halt for a while.
I suppose that's correct. We did see the inspectors right there at the ZenNow export elevator last summer when we went on the bus trip.
Absolutely. I mean, he had his own office, and he was right there all the time. And they can't ship any grain unless it's been USDA inspected. And so, you know, it's quite a quandary and quite a mess we've gotten ourselves into here.
Let's stay with the livestock sector for just a second. You made note on just a bit you sent me beforehand about cattle and choice and select ratio. So I take it that has to do with the available meat and USDA grading?
Well, it does. It has to do with that, but it also has to do with pricing. When you look at buyers going out into a lot, Todd, basically what they're looking for is that if you're a feedlot operator and you have 75% choice, that other 25% is going to get paid as if it's choice. Now, normally, when we look at a choice-select ratio, we're looking for about a 10-to-1 ratio. In other words, you know, we've got a good amount of choice right there. Well, at this point in time, we're running 4.1-to-1. And what that says to me, as a person who worked in the cattle industry, we've got a lot of green cattle in there. So from a pricing standpoint, I think this week we've seen some real pressure coming on the livestock market because of the sequestration and also because we have a lot more green cattle. We're just not anticipating having any opportunity for feeding them on any type of a pasture or anything else. And so there's a lot of things going on in the background.
Let me delve into this just a bit because I'm out of my area of expertise or my feeling. So when you say green cattle, you mean cattle that aren't ready to go to market or that are ready to go to market but not in condition? Which are the
well,
two?
What I mean by green cattle is that the available stocks basically that are there are not as mature as they should be to have made choice, but there's still the demand there that wants them. But so they're not going to pay you as much for them. They want the cattle, okay? That's the key. You know, they want the cattle. But they're not going to pay you as much because they're not going to hang as well on the rack. And so it also is, I guess you'd have to say, a statement to how tight our stocks are in the nearby month.
Right. So two things, I guess, that I hear you saying is the cattle aren't as good as maybe we would like them or you would like them coming into the marketplace, pushing the price of cattle down. And on the second thing, the reason that that's happening is because there's not enough grain and or available pasture to finish them out properly, and there are fewer of them around, and that would put pressure on the input side or corn and on the corn market for lack of use.
Well, up to a point, I don't know if I would take it quite that far, but
okay.
I think what it does is it does make a testament to the last cattle on feed report, and it showed that we had lighter placements in the heavier weight cattle. And so I think what it says is it states that there's good demand for beef, okay, that they're willing to take beef that aren't quite as finished, but they're not going to pay as high a price for it.
Okay. Ethanol plants. We've been talking about them closing, and now they're opening back up.
That's right. We had four ethanol plants announced that they're going to restart, three of those out in Nebraska, one in Rensselaer, Indiana. And that goes right along with the EIA coming out today and saying that we actually saw ethanol output up 1.9% last week. So, you know, I've always questioned this, whether these ethanol plants were actually closing down for retrofitting, if they were closing down because of lack of being able to source corn. Because when you look at the ratio, I heard you give the RBOB and the
spread.
Ethanol ratio, the spread. When I look at the spread, it's at 1.28. That is that should be a very profitable level for them to produce ethanol at. So I think this is a statement to the fact that they couldn't source corn properly or they were retrofitting one or the other.
Right. So probably out to the west they weren't able to source corn, and maybe to the east they might be retrofitting. In fact, we've heard that they were at least a couple of them retrofitting for greater extraction of oil.
Well, yeah, that's exactly true, you know. And when you just look at the big picture, you know, even just driving around town, you can see the difference between E85 and the cost of a gallon of gas.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certainly certainly good demand there for that.
European
markets, interesting markets. They have really been the sellers overnight lately. The European funds have been just coming in and they're selling. Then some of the managed funds got onto the bandwagon. Some of that has been, I mentioned this morning, attributed to less threatening weather and probably bigger crop expectations. We all know that that's a long ways away. But this afternoon, they actually announced, Barclays announced here in the U.S. that they're going to close down their agricultural long-only fund. That would be an index fund. And BMT, which was out of Brazil, is closing their agricultural fund, and they're doing it because they're being heavily pressured with people saying, you know, that this type of trading is causing food prices to go up too much. Just goes to show you how very few people really understand what causes food prices to change. But, you know, our general government attitude is that. And so I think we're starting to see some of that fallout. The bottom line, Todd, is that if you're a producer and you're still sitting on old crop corn, you have to be prepared. If we don't take care of this government issue we've got going on right now, sequestration before the end of the month, we could see some really severe cuts in the price, even though it's not really justified. It could happen. So I think you have to take a step back and you look at it. On the other hand, and you might have heard me say this on Dave's show this morning, I talked to one of my guys from Nebraska today. He's very close to a huge facility that normally has 3 million bushels of corn on hand at this time of the year. They're down to 500,000 bushels. And so, you know, they are very, very afraid as far as what's going to happen as we go further down the line. So we have a lot of different conflicting things going on here, but I think that the bottom line is the producer and the end user have to recognize all of these things impact the price that they receive.
Hey, one final note. Did I see you on Orion's This Week in Agribusiness over the weekend?
Well, you did.
Congratulations.
Really did. Well, thank you.
Congratulations.
It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. I've gotten tremendous feedback from clients and other people. In fact, even somebody I used to work with in my other life at the feed mill contacted me because he had seen me there, too. Orion is an absolute gentleman. He did his very best to make me feel comfortable.
He always does.
You know, yes, he does. And after he told me there were no retakes, that was a little tougher. But I have to thank you guys because my experience of doing live radio shows really helped me out a lot.
Well, you're so welcome. And guess what? Orion will be with us at the Farm Progress Show this summer, I know, at 10:30 in the morning, all 3 days at the University of Illinois tent. So,
wow.
More of
awesome.
Orion coming
awesome.
Up.
Yeah,
all right.
That's really wonderful. Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much, and have a great afternoon.
You too. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. That's Jackie Vake. She's with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign, Illinois, to take up the agricultural futures markets on this Wednesday afternoon.